When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to a brand new episode of Hi Jinx with me, Jinx Monsoon. Today, our guest Cole Escola talks all about their celebrated career, which has spanned decades at this point. We talk about their humble beginnings on webcams all the way up to today, where they're working with the greats such as Amy Sedaris and others. Honestly, though, Cole and I just sit here for an hour and talk about life, and it's really cute and sweet. So hunker down and sink in to some new hijinks.
Forever Dog.
Everyone, I'm Jinx Monsoon, and welcome to Hi Jinx, a podcast where I, an internationally tolerated drag superstar, get to interview compelling and fascinating people about how they became who they are and why they do what they do. Today, we are joined by poet laureate, Nobel Peace Prize winner, psychic, and the most followed person on TikTok. It's Cole Escola. Hi, Cole.
Hi, Jinx.
Thank you. You said it perfect. Now, that intro was a fountain of lies written by my producer. I don't know if any of those things are. Are you a psychic?
I don't know. I guess we'll see.
Wonderful answer.
Yeah.
Leave it open. But in all seriousness, you're an actor, a comedian, and a queer icon. Cole Escola, I have followed your work for so long. We've only crossed paths once in Australia.
In Australia. But actually, that's not true. Because, well, you, there's no way you would remember this. But
oh, no.
You, like.
Oh, no. Typically, when someone says that, it means it was a blackout.
No. I don't even think. We were so young. You were the first. We were at The Escape.
Oh my gosh, that's
formerly
right, because you grew up in Oregon as well.
Because I grew up in Oregon, yeah.
Jesus
That
Christ.
Underage gay club. it was, yeah, I was maybe 17, so which means you were 51. No, but I think you were, yeah, we're the same age, so you must have been. And I think you were the first drag queen that I ever saw in real life.
That's true for quite a handful of people who lived in Oregon. yes, for our listeners, The Escape, a.k.a. Club Z, a.k.a. The City Nightclub, a.k.a. Misfits at one point, was an all-ages queer dance club here in Portland, Oregon. In the 80s, it had a reputation, not just in the queer community, but hip straight people used to go there, too. It's always been an all-ages dance club. And one of the biggest privileges I had growing up in Portland was to have a queer dance club as a gay teenager.
Yeah. And you were the star. You were the star.
I mean, kind of by force. I really just took that place over.
I just remember going in there and seeing you walk in and everyone. It was like, you know, Mame or like just like everyone was like, Jinx, you know, and of course we were underage. So it was like, water's on me, everybody.
Help yourself to an Arizona iced tea.
Yeah.
Now I'm just imagining the musical number of seeing me walking into the club. And my friends would go with me, and they'd actually go to dance. You know, they'd be sneaking drinks in the parking lot. I sure. literally just went to work the door line. Mm-hmm. I would stand outside holding court in the door line, and then I'd put on the drag show. And I didn't dance one bit at that dance club.
You refused. Oh, because you were a Mormon at the time. I forgot.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we didn't have the balloons to hold in between me and my dance partner.
Yeah.
But besides that, I've been following your career. Oh, well, I'll get to that in a second. I'll get to the time I remember in a moment. But let me give you a little bit of an introduction. You most recently have appeared on countless shows, not limited to, but including Search Party, At Home with Amy Sedaris.
Check.
And a few pop-ups on Z-Way on Showtime, which is an amazing show. I also clocked every moment you were in The Characters. It was the John Early episode.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you have such a distinguished face. You have Betty Davis eyes and an otherwise, you know, just baby face. And you're a transformative actor and comedian, but I always see those eyes open up and it's like, it's Cola Scola just dressed as Lisa Loeb for some reason, you know?
Yes. Yeah. Lisa Loeb. My first original character. Lisa Loeb was the first character
I ever did.
It was
the whole time.
It was. Sorry.
And then all the way back before all of this recent success, you also had a show on Logo with longtime collaborator Jeffrey Self called Jeffrey and Cole Casserole, which was an amazing sketch show because it was entirely filmed on a webcam, yes?
Yeah. Yep.
And it was just the two of you doing sketches in
his
someone's
bedroom.
New York apartment.
Yeah. Truly. Like with his roommates in the other room, or we would use their rooms while they were at work and hope that they didn't see it. And know
I
that we were in their rooms.
Every episode of Jeffrey and Cole Casserole.
Oh,
and I also
all
watched all 12 of them. I also watched all of the VGL Gay Boys on YouTube, which predates Jeffrey and Cole Casserole. I was a huge fan of your work. Tell me a little bit about this journey from webcam TV shows to working alongside Amy Sedaris.
I mean, like, you basically summed it up. That's the timeline from YouTube to Logo, and then 10 years of hardship and clawing my way into the mainstream, the outskirts of the mainstream, and now here I am, just clinging
lunging
to the outside
loose-knit
of
Afghan,
in New York City of all places.
Well, what caused that jump from being very independent and DIY? Who first saw you? Was it just, you know, you grinded
away.
Also works.
Also.
I'm most curious just to know, like, how did it come about you being a recurring character on At Home with Amy Sedaris and holding your own against one of, like, the living comedy legends of our generation?
Yeah, I don't know why she let me do that, but she I met her doing Difficult People. We had like one scene together and I was like, you know, I worshiped her. And so I was like, this is my chance. Like, so I improvised something different every take because I really wanted to like make her laugh. Mm-hmm. And, it worked. And, then she and the writers on her show wrote a character for me. And then I ended up in the writer's room also. So I got to spend lots and lots of time with her.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I always forget the name of your character.
Her name's
because...
Chassie.
Chassie.
Chassie, yeah.
And what's her last name?
Tucker, Chassie Tucker.
Chassie Tucker. Mm-hmm. Dela has a my collaborator,
yeah.
Binda La Creme, has another drag persona called Kissy Simmons. And I always think your character's name is Kissy Simmons, but it's not. It's those Chassie Tucker.
They're in the same family, Kissy Simmons and Chassie Tucker. They are those sound like bad people that know each other.
They're bad people who know each other.
Yeah.
I have to say, you are remarkable in the fact that you play quite a barrage of female and femme characters with minimal makeup, but completely believably. You know,
that
like,
is
I
so
have to
sweet.
Really slather on the grease paint. I have to
reconstruct
my
face. I don't know if I would
face.
Say that you have to do that. You, I mean, you read pretty femme right now.
Well,
with
I mean,
what do you have?
Can't just hide it. Just my little clear frame glasses.
Just a lip.
A little tinted moisturizer.
Yeah.
Listen, but it's amazing how authentically you read as your femme personas. Like, I don't want to say understated because that makes it sound like you're not working hard. Because, but you, I don't know, you bring a subtlety, an earnestness, and like a, I don't know, chill vibe to femme personas that not a lot of drag performers
That's
do.
So I'm flattered and I'm embarrassed.
Embarrassed how?
I don't know. Like I just don't like you know, when you get a compliment, you want to hide under a rock.
And then
think about it later.
At taking compliments.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's what is that about? What's that about?
Well, what's your sign?
I'm a Sagittarius. Virgo rising. Or no, Virgo moon.
That's it. It's your Virgo.
It's my Virgo moon.
I'm just making wild hypotheses here. I'm a Virgo, so I'm just trying to say, like, anything you have in common with me must be because
it must be the Virgo. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not because we're the same age and grew up in the same state.
No.
Where in Oregon did you grow up?
A town called Clatskanie. Very rural. It's it's a mill town.
Well, yeah, and I try to explain this to people not from Oregon. Oregon is a very,
huge. It's a huge state.
It's a huge state. And then you got Portland, this metropolitan epicenter that everyone now knows about thanks to Portlandia. And then the rest of the state is just, like...
is red state.
Lumber,
yeah.
Farming,
yeah.
Rural country.
Yeah.
Portland is so
densely
populated.
I grew up with a lot of people that had a lot of, that had, southern accents. Even though...
Me too.
Yeah.
All the drag queens from the surrounding cities come into Portland and somehow have it's not quite southern, but it's certainly
it's like
not.
A drawl. It's a like drawl. A yeah. It's very it's very slight, but it's still like are you lying? Like what is that? Like I never yeah.
It's just the proximity to tractors and lumber mills. Did you have a dialect you had to neutralize when you started working in the biz?
No, I think I always grew up, you know, we call it pop over there, but I always called it soda to sort of like separate myself. Like, no, I'm, you know, so I always went out of my way to pronounce things more pretentiously. And now I just fit in where I am. But... yeah,
I completely hear that. I've been hypothesizing for a while. Hypothesis is the word of the day, apparently. I've been hypothesizing for a while that queer people who are growing up outside of the metropolitan cities near them have a tendency to affect their speech and their dialects to sound more like the city that they are eventually going to move to.
Yeah. I can't wait to read your thesis on this.
My thesis on,
yeah. I'll look for
queer
it
dialects
in
and Virgo tendencies.
TV guide. Yeah. I would love that if you had like a scientific column in TV guide every week.
You know, every year I think I know exactly what my career is and then someone throws some some curveball at me, and I'm like, I guess I do this now too.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the first time we met that I remember. Mm-hmm. This is in Australia.
Yeah.
We both had live shows there, and it was hilarious that, like, following your career, following this queer icon, Kola Skola, for so much of my life, and then it took being in Australia for us to meet each other.
Sydney. Yeah.
And my favorite part of our first time meeting is I actually worked this as a joke into one of my shows. We were talking about douching on the road.
Oh, right. I don't remember the conversation, but I know that it was a big issue then because I had to walk. They don't have like fleet enemas. They don't have disposable enema, or they didn't. Any of the like drug stores I went, grocery stores. I had to go to a sex shop just to get a douche. And so, which is fine, but it was just, you know, like an extra, you know, 2 miles out of
just
my way.
Just another way we're spoiled in America.
People just don't realize that our access to disposable enemas is such a privilege in this
country.
It's
such a privilege.
Yeah.
But I did tell you a life hack.
To use a water bottle?
I had to learn on the... Yes, a water bottle. I think I said Coke bottle. But the point is, you know, I was talking about, you know, filling up squeezable plastic bottle with water as a makeshift enema.
Yeah.
And you said, I don't think I could get the top part of a water bottle in my ass to do that. And I said,
yeah,
if you can't fit the top part of a water bottle into your ass, then what are you going to do with a human-sized dick?
And you were right.
And
you're,
you know,
right.
What? And I'm still a virgin.
But I remember Jeffrey was with me, and he, mm-hmm, I walked all the way to the sex shop, and I bought an enema. I still have it to this day. It's it's probably the object I've had the longest in my whole life, is that douche bulb from Sydney, Australia. But he tried using a water bottle, and he said it just made a big mess everywhere. So then he asked to use mine.
Was that a new level of intimacy in your friendship?
It was. And so the only... he said that he would buy me a new one if I let him use mine. Because I don't know. Like, I would even share a toothbrush, but I don't know. Maybe... Maybe now I would be more comfortable sharing an enema with somebody, but I don't know. I don't know. Listeners, call in. 1-877 cars for kids.
Two questions come to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
How did Jeffrey make such a mess? Like, what's up with Jeffrey's butt that,
yeah,
like, he couldn't do it?
I think probably too loose.
My thought is, what's wrong with my butt that I can do it so easily?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's let's just move off of that topic. Oh, no.
Are you sure?
Oh, no. Finish us out.
Well, yeah. Here's my hypothesis. It's just like such a... I bet he was just like bad. It was bad aim, you know? And I bet he wasn't relaxed enough. So it was just like squirting everywhere. Before it got in. I don't mean the enema water, like, exiting, by the way.
Do we need to get Jeffrey's permission to
no.
include this section of the
Not at all.
Podcast? Early in your work, you were working heavily with Jeffrey Self, mm-hmm, who's also had a decorated career as an actor and comedian. Do you two still collaborate a lot to this day?
You know, we didn't for a long time, but we're actually collaborating on two different things right now. Like, I'm developing an animated show that he's been helping me with.
Ooh,
and he's been he's writing a script for a streaming service that I don't know if I'm allowed to say. But I've been helping him with that. So, yeah, we're getting the band back together.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but I've done a lot of voiceover work, and I'm always looking for more.
Yeah.
So when it gets to that point, you know,
if I need an old sea witch, yeah.
Listen, I do lots of voices, okay?
I know.
But sea witch is just the go-to. You've been out your entire professional career, as far as I can tell. Mm-hmm. And that, like, goes back to at least a decade now at this point.
Over.
And 10 years ago, yeah. Over 10 years ago, it was not as easy to begin your career out. You know, lots of people who were so clearly gay still kept up this idea that, you know, they're a straight, cis, hetero person just because it could be a death sentence to their professional careers.
Yeah.
What's it been like for you to be really a trailblazer and a queer icon as long as you've been in the public eye?
Oh, God. you know, it's been wonderful to be able to open doors for all these children and have them owe me everything. No, I mean, I'm sure you're the same way. Like, there was no other option. There was no way that I was ever going to, like, pass as a... And I didn't want to. But yeah, you're right. It has happened fast. Like, I remember even Sean Hayes, like, having to, like, during the time of Will and Grace, it was like, is he gay? Is he straight? It was like, he had to, like, come out. It couldn't just be, like, isn't it obvious?
Isn't it obvious?
Yeah. So, but to answer your question, I have no idea.
Have you faced any specific difficulties in your career?
I don't think that I've faced any... Well, I think that there is a big difference between a queer point of view and a queer perspective and a story about a queer person. Like, I think it's still hard to get queer stories made or stories from a queer perspective about things that aren't coming out or...
Yeah.
Like, everything has to be for the straight audience, you know, like, with a straight audience in mind. So everything has to, like, sort of, I feel like a lot of shows from any marginalized artist, like a queer person, a Black person, whatever, their work has to almost explain themselves or justify why they are, like, allowed to be alive.
You want to see a lot of crash courses,
yes,
a lot of
exactly.
like introduction to and at this point I'm like, haven't we seen enough coming out stories? I do think we're getting to a point where it can be more nuanced, you know. I had the privilege of working on the movie Happiest Season, which was written by a queer person, directed by a queer person, starring queer people. And the story was very much a coming out story, but not tinged with the same level of tragedy that we've been conditioned to assume goes with every coming out story.
Yeah.
I mean, my coming out story is kind of boring because of how nonplussed my family was about it.
You know? I know.
There was never, they were less concerned with whether or not I was queer and just kind of trying to bet on when I'd come out about it. You know?
Who won the bet?
I think my grandma.
It's always the grandma.
I think she knew I'd come out before college.
Yeah.
I came out very early. And like you said, there was just no other option.
Right.
I did have a couple girlfriends in middle school. Mm-hmm. But first makeout party I went to, I was like, oh, I don't know how many more of these I can do.
I think I kissed one girl and I was like, oh, God, I can't do that. And it wasn't her. It wasn't like the act of kissing. Now I could do it and sure, I'm sure I could get into it and have fun. It was like the pressure. I felt like, now you're kissing, now you have to have sex with her.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't, I don't know.
Well, I think yeah. also, you know, just with the way our community has evolved, the way society has evolved, the way we evolve as we age, I very much felt like a gay boy as mm-hmm. a teenager.
Yeah.
And very much was your typical gay boy. Like, I'm attracted to other gay boys.
Yes.
Now at 33, I'm a trans femme non-binary person who's attracted to basically everyone.
Everything.
Not really cishet women, but, yeah. you know, I'm not going to say never because right. every once in a while I end up in one of those threesomes with a married couple and it's like, here I am licking pussy. Who knew?
I hear you. I never thought I would ever fist someone. And there have now been two people that I've fisted. And it's not something that I would... In porn, it makes me squeamish, but mm-hmm. in person, I was like, oh, this is great. Like, they are loving this. It's also like, when your fist is inside someone, you're like, oh, my cock was never going to be enough. Like, like, ooh, how embarrassing for me. Like, I'm glad I can help this way then, you know?
I found myself doing all kinds of things where I was like, I'm not really into this, but seeing the other person.
Yeah, you would be so surprised into it. How many things you'll do just because it's actually really hot in the moment.
Yeah. 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 And then you get off and then you sit there and want to puke because you have the...
I didn't have that reaction.
I am definitely one of those...
Not yet.
No, I'm not puking because of the other person, but I am definitely one of those people where as soon as the orgasm happens, I'm like, what did I just do? Like, alone in my bed. I'm 33 years old, jacking off alone in my bed. And the second I get off and I'm like... Oh my God.
I feel that way. I only feel that way about the time that I've spent. I'm like, the second I come, I go, oh my God, I spent 2 hours. I literally spent 2 hours looking for that 3 minute video.
All for this. Flipping through videos.
For this
mess. Scrolling ahead.
Yeah. Scrolling ahead. Mm. Saving. adding to a playlist for late, like, and I'm like, oh my God, I could have done my dishes for once. And
very
it's a nightmare.
Pragmatic.
I want to see that in a Love, Simon, you know. I want to see him shame spiral about how much time he spent looking for the right clip,
the perfect
yeah
stepbrother. Cole, you also identify as a non-binary person and
yeah.
you use they/them pronouns. You identify as queer. Do you think these identities find their way into your work? Is it a conscious thing? Do you make sure to infuse your certain joie de vivre and je ne sais quoi into your work as a queer non-binary person?
I feel like the term non-binary and using they/them pronouns are more like a clarification than like mm-hmm. a new identity. Sort of just like, this is who I've always been. And now that mm-hmm. there's language, now that I'm aware of this language for it, I shouldn't say now that it, because it's not new. Obviously, third and fourth, fifth, sixth genders have existed for a bajillion years, but
literally a bajillion. That's in my bajillion. Notes.
Yeah, yeah, I see that right there in your TV guide.
Doc.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I guess it used to bother me when people would be like, "Oh, that's a dude." Like it's like as if the joke was that I was a guy playing a girl when that was that's never been my intention. Like when I play characters, I'm like, hopefully the comedy is like in the writing or like the
yeah.
like the specific character, not in
the
fact that I'm like, I have a penis and yet yeah. here I am pretending to have long hair. It's like, what is, you know, like, whoa.
Yeah. I think yeah. I think that's a very good distinction between, like, I mean, I of course grew up with the same films of other yeah. people my age, where it was just the whole joke was it was a man yeah. dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
And I got into a fight with my classical literature of theater teacher because mm-hmm. he said that American audiences will never be able to accept a male actor playing a female character earnestly because there mm-hmm. will always be that joke of it's a right. man in drag.
Yeah.
And I think we're starting to gravitate away from that. And one of the best examples is probably, I've never even watched the show, so what? I might be speaking out my ass. But from what I hear, of all people, Louis Anderson in the show.
That performance is incredible. It's like sentimental. It's
that
really
show called Baskets?
Baskets, yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I think you'd like it a lot.
I've got to try it because yeah. I've heard such wonderful things about, but yeah. who knew it was going to be Louis Anderson?
I know. I know. I mean, it's a beautiful performance. And I just wish that it wasn't viewed or treated as like, oh my God, look at like, look how surprising it is that a man can do this, like, or how silly it is, yeah. you know? And it's like, there's a lot of, like, queer people that can do a lot of queer things. And yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's a problem in the industry.
Sure.
I think a lot of it is that creators, producers don't give their audiences enough credit.
Yeah.
You know, they yeah. write characters that are meant to be what we're describing. And then yeah. they cast, you know, cisgendered pretty boys in the roles
yeah.
who have no access to those characters.
Yeah.
And they might deliver a great performance. I'm not knocking, you know, the many
Eddie Redmayne.
Multitudes of actors out there.
Name
but,
names. Yeah.
But I know I don't know how many times I've talked about it on this podcast, but I know I'm sick of like seeing like drag queens get cast in things to play like a two-line cameo.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then a really good drag role is written and then given to a cisgendered pretty boy. They might be
yeah.
they might be gay or queer, but it's yeah. typically someone who's never done drag, can't access that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something you can be taught in a morning in the makeup chair.
Right.
And, you know, but they're cast in it because the creators assume when that person gets out of drag, the audience is going to want someone who looks like a hot dude when he's
yeah.
not dressed as a woman.
Yeah.
That's the frustrating bit.
But I mean, I also think it's not, not that they should be allowed to do that, but like, mm-hmm. we shouldn't, I know that I'm not looking to any mainstream shows or movies anymore for like
yeah.
Any Guidance. Sort of art or yeah, yeah, yeah. Any sort of artistry or like,
yeah.
yeah. So I mean, the problem is really about like access and resources and like,
yeah.
I think queer people and artists should have access to more resources, but I'm not going to look to like, you know, an NBC show for like
a Netflix original. For
right. For like for a story, for like an actually good anything for anything good. Yeah.
I, you know, and we are seeing a rising trend in the stuff that's excelling right now. A lot of stuff that's excelling right now is, stuff that was created by collaborators. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. would say you're ahead of the curve there because Jeffrey and Cole Casserole predate shows like Broad City or Pen 15.
Yeah.
Or It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I know I brought up in my very last podcast with Carrie Preston. But you know what? I talk about what I know.
Yeah. I mean, I love all those shows. But I also like... I'm trying to let go of needing. I've always had my own barometer for like, mm-hmm. like whether or not something I do is good, And I don't need, it to get like the full like press release treatment from like a major studio in order to be like, I think that was great and I'm proud of it. Because that's the only difference between like what, you know, queer content creators on YouTube do and like what people with, you know, script deals for HBO Max or Netflix do, you know, like, it doesn't make them any better.
Distribution.
Yeah.
We're just talking about distribution.
Yes. Yeah.
Also perform live in the cabaret circuit. Lots of shows at the, you know, the legendary Joe's Pub in New York City, where you also reside. What is a live Cole Escola show like?
Desperate. I push and try so hard to please every sec. I don't relax for a second. I am so terrified of anyone having a bad time that I just push and push until no one can stand it and everyone has to go home. That's what I would, say a live show is.
That's
like
your Virgo. That's your Virgo in you. I can definitely relate because
I think that's actually my mom and dad, but yeah.
I can relate because I am the type of live performer. I have stopped shows to have a conversation with someone who looks like they're not having a good time, to find out why they're not having a good time. Maybe it's something going on in their life. Maybe a joke didn't sit well with them. And this is why I always work with a second person on stage, because I need someone to bring me back to the show I'm actually supposed to be doing.
Rather than confronting the audience members. And saying, why are you crying?
Why are you crying? My favorite example of this, I was doing the Vaudevillians at the Seattle Repertory Theater in Seattle, as it were. And front row,
shocking
opening night, there is a fairly old woman just not having a good time. And then I asked her if she was having a good time, and she said, it's okay. And I said, was this not your choice to come to the show? And she said, I was brought here for my birthday.
Oh, no.
And I said, this isn't how you planned your birthday. And she was like, no, not at all.
Wow. That was opening night there.
Opening night. It actually was a great bit in the show.
That's fun.
The rest of the audience loved me putting that one old lady on blast, but
great.
What's your favorite thing about live performance that you can't get out of the men filming?
The men lining up at the door afterwards. A sense of control, even though it's false, but it's, you know, like, If someone's bored, I can if I see someone looking away, I can do something to try and get their attention.
Yeah.
But if someone's looking away at a video I've made, it's too late. The video's already made.
It's too late. And what's your favorite thing about working in film and TV that you can't get out of live performance?
Just more people, more eyes on it.
Yeah.
You know, or the opportunity for more eyes, even if more people aren't actually watching.
The globalization of it, the fact that it can be seen.
The globalization of my online work is... Yeah.
Something I definitely want to talk to you about is... you aging. Do a lot of original characters. We'll get to aging. You do a lot of original characters, but you also do some amazing impersonations. I am a late in life. I came to impersonations late in life, and now I'm obsessed with, you know, perfecting my impersonations. My absolute favorite impersonation that you do is Bernadette Peters, which is simultaneously like very authentic to Bernadette Peters, like, you know right away who you're doing, but it also has this level of absurdity that you bring to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love to take someone who is, like, where the expectations are either low or non-existent. Like, like when someone's like, this person's going to do a Bernadette Peters impression, you're like, what is that going to be? Like, well, I guess I'm open. Like, you know, yeah.
My two favorite moments from past Bernadette impressions you've done, caught on film. One was one of your videos with Jeffrey Self, and you say this line, I haven't seen a film since 1999. Why 99? That's the year I won my Tony.
Thanks. Wow, I forgot about that one.
It lives in my brain rent-free, as the kids say. Also, there's a video. I don't know if it's still on YouTube. I hope it is, because I'm going to direct people to it now. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just called Bernadette Peters Swinging Her Arms, or Bernadette Peters Arm Swinging.
Something like that. Yeah, I think that's... Did I take that? Oh, I think that might have gotten taken down
Bernadette
for copyright.
A cease and desist.
I think it was because I used, like, you know, it's the song that I used in it, which is so unfortunate.
It was amazing because it's just you dressed as Bernadette, again, minimal makeup.
No makeup.
The perfect wig. You're wearing a strapless black dress, and you're just you're lip syncing to Unexpected Song, and you just start wildly flailing your arms back and forth. And then I looked up different performances. Oh, it's still up.
I'm getting
our
word
producer
from...
Big Dipper says it's still up. Go find it, everyone. Cola Scola as Bernadette Peters swinging her arms. I went and looked at all of these. There it is. It's wow. So amazing. The hair is perfect. The way you're swinging that microphone.
It's a screwdriver.
It's
as
so
a microphone.
Good. Oh, it's a screwdriver.
Yeah.
I went and looked up all these different captures of Bernadette singing that song, and your observation was so astute. Every time she gets to the chorus, she starts swinging her arms around.
Yeah, it's some weird choreography that she has with that song where she just flails and swings and turns, and she's a force.
She is a force. Mm. Have you ever met Bernadette Peters in person?
I've met her once. I was the as every faggot in New York gets to do. I was the bartender on Watch What Happens Live on an episode she was on. Some queen that works there, I guess, thought I'll hand Cole a little gift. And so
I didn't. Yeah, I don't watch What Happens Live, but I've been watching the other two and the recurring mm-hmm. joke about every gay bartender. I mean, I've been a drag queen bartender.
Yeah. It's a humiliating rite of passage for every queer performer.
Do you think Andy Cohen does that just as like a power move to be the alpha gay of all alpha gays?
I think it's sadder than that. I think they really think that they're helping us, and in a way they probably are, you know.
And I mean, I'm grateful for the times that I've done it.
Of course, me too.
If it weren't for Watch, not trying to put words in your mouth. I'm just saying, if it weren't for Watch What Happens Live, I would have never met Whoopi Goldberg. And
see, yeah,
I thought I was going to pass out. That's only happened to me twice in my life, when I met Whoopi Goldberg and when I met Kristen Chenoweth.
Yeah.
I don't know what was going on, but my vision blurred.
Sure.
My knees weakened. I thought I was going to completely faint. And that's mm-hmm. those are the only two times that's ever happened to me.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm grateful.
Now
yeah.
Kristen and I are old friends. Now I
of
see
course.
Her.
Of course. I'm excited for your two-woman show together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's going to actually play Elphaba. That's the twist.
Oh.
What are some other of your favorite impressions that you do, celebrity impersonations?
I don't really have... I'm not really good at impressions. That's why I chose Bernadette Peters, because I was like, oh, she's almost a blank slate. Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of like what people expect from a Bernadette Peters impression, which is almost nothing. So, yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of... I just don't know that... I impersonate her singing voice. I haven't honed in on anything as brilliant as you with just, you know, your workaday Bernadette Peters.
It's more of a bastardization than an impression. Sometimes I like to shout as Elaine Stritch around.
Can I hear a little of that?
Yeah, sure. I have to hold the mic far away, though. Wrong! That's it.
Love it. Love it. Can you identify things that imprinted on you?
Oh.
No, I'm completely blind.
I have, yeah.
I've made it this far without anyone knowing that before.
Yeah.
Can you identify things that imprinted on you when you were younger that led you to be so tickled by the kooky and subversive?
I think, I just think classic movies and soap operas. I used to love Days of Our Lives. Would run home from school to watch it. I always missed the first, you know, 10 minutes because that's, you know, school let out and I bolted, but yeah. yeah, just classic movies. Oh, I loved, one thing that I miss is Sunday night TV movies.
I don't think I ever... What? You say that like, I remember Saturday morning cartoons, but I don't know that I'm familiar with Sunday night TV movies.
Oh, yeah. It was like the movie of the week, like a Sunday night. Like, eventually ABC turned it into like a Disney. There was like Disney. Do you remember Toothless with Kirstie Alley? That was like one of the.
How could I forget it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But then there were more like on CBS, they did like more adult type, you know, like the. Like the TV movie version of Touched by an Angel sort of thing. Like that sort of genre.
I think a common thread here between the things you're talking about is these super stylized, heightened performances, like in classic movies and in soap operas and in a lot of made-for-TV movies.
Yeah.
There's a heightened, stylized performance that we are supposed to accept as that's just how humans act.
And I love it. I love it. It's beautiful. It's more it's more fun than real life. Like of
it's
course
closer
I,
to Shakespeare than anything else, really.
Yeah, it's so poetic. Like even if it's bad poetry, it's still like, you know, people don't talk like that. And which is what I love about it. Like there is this one TV movie that I another thing I miss is like having to watch things when they were on. I'm such a like an old crank about that, but like remember how exciting it was when it was like, oh my god, Mommy Dearest is on right now, and like calling my friends and being like, turn on channel 17, Mommy Dearest is on.
That's a very good point. There was more of a ritual and a ceremony around it when
and it was it was a
you
thrill.
You can just do it whenever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, there's goods and bads to both
sides.
Of course.
But I do miss the... Yeah.
We're lucky to be of an age that we remember that because I don't know. I work with some 20-year-olds these days. They just have no idea what it's like to not have what you want the moment you want it.
Yeah. Yeah. In my day, we had to wait. We had to wait for Mommy Dearest.
We had to sit through commercials.
We got that TV guide every week and we looked through every day's programming to say, oh God, I hope Mommy Dearest is on this week. We just had to hope that someone at Turner Classic Movies would program it.
Some queen.
Some fucking
TCM would throw a bitch a bone once in a while.
Exactly. Mm. But there was one movie called, it was like the Dottie West story, starring Michelle Lee. Dottie West was a country singer who lived extravagantly and like went bankrupt and then like died in a car accident. And but the TV movie about her life was so on the nose TV movie, like, you know, a little girl in a shack in the woods being like, I'm going to be a big star someday. And, you know, and then she is.
And then she is. And it's that simple.
Yeah. It's that
I have one last thing to address before I give you my closeout questions.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a quote on Wikipedia that I need you to explain.
Okay.
It says, Escola has a collection. Escola has a collection of 38 wigs, which they store under their bed in 7-Eleven donut boxes.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you clean out the donut boxes first? Or well, are you sprinkles and sugar crust?
No, they are empty donut boxes. So that started because I lived near a 7-Eleven. I'm lucky enough to say that at one point in my life, I lived dangerously close to a 7-Eleven. And I went there one day and I had been looking for some way to store my wigs, like Tupperware, like big Rubbermaid containers or storage containers were too big. And then I saw these little square donut boxes with like a clear, you know, film on top. And I was like, oh, these would be great because I can see inside.
They're small enough
that I can stack so I can travel them well. And I just said, can I buy these donut boxes from you? And they said, they said, you can have them. So, yeah.
And from those humble beginnings.
Those humble beginnings. Because of that kind cashier at 7-Eleven.
I don't know if plaid pantries are countrywide. Sometimes I talk about plaid pantries, which are just exactly like 7-Elevens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they're Oregon specific or Northwest specific, and I can't remember if I see them around the country. But plaid pantries are just like 7-Elevens, except every plaid pantry is a nexus to hell. It is, you will go any time of day you mm-hmm. go to a plaid pantry, just the most bizarre, crazy shit is happening. And I live near a plaid pantry. I'm not lucky enough to be near a 7-Eleven.
Because you're bizarre, weird shit.
But I'll go there stoned sometimes, and especially in the apex of the pandemic, I would go there stoned and just witness things that I'm like, I can't believe this is happening out in the world right now.
Do you think that other people saw you and thought the same thing?
Absolutely. I have to remember that nowadays with my eyebrowless bald face and my like the eyeliner I wear on any typical day, my mm-hmm. flaming red hair.
Mm-hmm. Jinx Monsoon at a plaid pantry. I think maybe she was stoned. She was moving so slow. She was just, yeah.
I could barely pay attention to the man's pit bull that was eating the Frito-Lays right out of the bag.
Yeah.
Yes, I do think about that sometimes. I sometimes catch myself kind of like really taking someone else in, and then I'll catch their eyes and realize they're doing the same to me. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm one of them. I'm sitting here like, I'm sitting here thinking, what an amazing sight to be seeing right now. But that's what they're thinking about me. And it's not the
beautiful
Jinx Monsoon of it all. It's just that like, you know, I mean, in my day-to-day high-heeled Doc Martens, I'm like 6'3".
Mm-hmm.
The amount of times I get called ma'am, sir, out, it's always a ma'am, sir, or a sir, ma'am. Like, they say one and then quickly correct themselves to the other one because they're not sure what.
They're covering their bases.
Just in case.
All of it.
These are my closeout questions for you, Cola Scola.
Mm-hmm.
I ask every guest this. You're free to interpret them however you want. But I want to know. Mm-hmm. Who's your celebrity crush?
Celebrity crush. Oh my God. I mean, right now I just have the biggest talent crush on Meg Stalter. And so I but I get that way with people that are, and their talent, you know, like I just want to be around them.
Yeah.
And giggle and lay on the floor and let them use me.
I don't often have talent crushes. I mean, I'm sure I do. Mm-hmm. But whenever I hear crush, the first thing my slutty brain goes to is like, who am I DTF for?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is anybody for me.
Anybody, really.
Anybody, yeah.
I'll just say I do not remember the actor's name. I'm sure Dipper will have it looked up by the time I end this run-on sentence. But I've recently been rewatching Mama's Family, one of my favorite shows of all time.
Yes.
And I remember being so hot for the Bubba? Actor who played Bubba as a
yeah,
kid.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Bubba, he was good old so Bubba. Hot. So
I
hot.
Know.
Yeah.
Bubba, and you know, the original, the one who played Buzz, the actor who played Buzz, because on the first two seasons, okay, Bubba was played by Alan Kazer. The first two seasons of Mama's Family was completely different, and then they retooled it, because mm-hmm. it had Rue McClanahan and Betty White
right.
on the first two seasons, and then right. they left to do Golden Girls. And when they left, they reformatted the whole show, got rid of Vince Kidd's. Mm-hmm. Changed Naomi's hair, brought in Bubba, and brought in the neighbor Iola.
I loved Iola.
Iola is
yeah.
an icon.
What a name. Yeah.
enough about Mama's Family. My next question is, are you spiritual?
Yes. The end.
Wonderful.
I mean, I don't believe in God. I consider myself to be an atheist, but I do feel like in order to be 'cause I'm sober, and in order to like stay like have any sense of wanting to live, I have to sort of keep a sense of like gratitude and wonderment about the universe, even if it and I mean the universe not in like the woo-woo way, but in the like science way of like oh my God, what is out there in outer space?
Absolutely.
Terrifying.
And I think a lot of people think you have to be one or the other, like either woo-woo or science, but I've found a lot of intersection between my scientific beliefs and my woo-woo beliefs. And, you know, I can relate to the fact that when I stopped drinking, I had a lot more time in my life for witchcraft, so I just inherently became more spiritual because I'm not hungover all the time.
Yeah.
So I actually have the energy to wake up and do some things.
Yeah. And you're still, but you still howl at the moon. But now you do it sober.
Yeah.
Ish.
Now I do. Yeah. Now it's a conscious choice.
It's a choice.
final getting to know you question. What's your go-to karaoke song?
Rose's Turn.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to go big or just like, or don't bother, you know?
It's one of my favorite songs in existence.
It's absolutely. It also is so inappropriate to do at karaoke. It's like, because I sort of hate karaoke.
I've heard every karaoke track of Rose's Turn. There's not a single one that sounds good.
No,
just the quality of the track itself.
The quality of the track, the key. It's all. It's always horrible. And it either like goes over really well, or everyone's like furious at you for turning like a birthday party into a one-person show.
And do you fully act out the
absolutely
the moments of,
absolutely
you commit
mama,
to those moments of
mama yeah.
mama
you have
do
to.
You have a do you have a favorite performance of Rose's Turn? So many legendary actresses have played
I mean
this role.
Like the tiny clips there's just like a really brief clip of Angela Lansbury doing it in the 70s, and that makes me shiver. I love her, but I also love Patty. I loved Bernadette's Tony performance. Was
me
that
too.
Rose's Turn?
Yeah. I always go back to the Gypsy soundtrack. I listened to the most was Bernadette's. Well before Patty did it, but I think the best like performance of Rose I've seen is Bette Midler which was a made-for-TV movie of Gypsy.
Sure, sure.
Full circle. I just think she is the closest to what the character was written to be, probably since Ethel Merman. But Patti LuPone, obviously.
Sure.
Really just kind of... And I've heard Imelda Staunton really, really stakes some claim on that role.
I hate her in that role. But I have a really good, like, my friend Michael R. Jackson, who wrote A Strange Loop, won the Pulitzer Prize. But he loves Imelda as Rose because I hate her because I think she's, like, obnoxious and pathetic and grating. And that's why Michael loves her as Rose. I think she's vulgar and I want to step on her. But he thinks that's why she's great as Rose. So
I don't think I've ever heard such an
it's the only opinion I have
about Imelda Staunton at all. I don't think anyone else in my life has ever made an opinion.
I adore her in Follies. Mm-hmm. Her version of Losing My Mind might be my favorite. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
Bombarda. Maxima. And that's where I'll end it. Cole, do you have anything to promote? We've talked a lot about the projects you're on. I hope people will go out and watch all the many, many wonderful shows you've been a part of. But what would you like to say goodbye to our listeners with? Plug away. Give us your social medias.
I've been kicked off of Twitter. But you can follow me on Instagram.
You and Cole Trump.
Scola. Yeah. It was for the same reasons, ruining America. I was kicked off. And then I have a YouTube special called Help I'm Stuck that I produce myself. And it's just me in my apartment. It's very low, low grade. But if you want to, like, if you're someone who smokes a lot of pot, I think it would be a very soothing, fun thing to have on.
Like when you leave the radio on for your pets.
Yeah, exactly.
Stoners will enjoy.
Leave my YouTube special on for your stoner roommate while you go out. Yeah.
It's been an absolute delight, Cole. Thank you so much for joining us today. And thank you all so much for listening to Hijinks here on the Forever Dog and Moguls of Media Network. My name is Jinx Monsoon, and we have new episodes every Wednesday, so make sure to search for Hi Jinx on your favorite podcast app and hit subscribe. You can follow me at The Jinx, that's J-I-N-K-X, on Instagram, or Jinx Monsoon everywhere else. And Cola Scola, again, is Cola Scola, at Cola Scola, on Instagram. I was talking when you said it the last time, so I'm giving you an extra plug there.
You're too kind.
I'll see you all next Wednesday for some more hijinks.
Forever
To listen to Hijinks ad-free and one day early, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. Make sure to follow at Forever Dog Team and at Mom Podcasts on social and rate and review Hijinks 5 stars on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hijinks is produced by Forever Dog and Moguls of Media, aka Mom, hosted by me, Jinx Monsoon, produced by Big Dipper, editing and sound design by Will Pitts, executive produced by Willem Belli, Alaska Thunderfuck, Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.